How are we doing, Pork Fest? All right, thanks for coming out, guys. Thanks for coming to listen to me talk. I never thought that I would be somebody that people would want to listen to, but here I am. A lot of you guys probably know me already. For those who don't, my name is Reed Coverdale. I'm a truck driver, lineman, kind of jack of all trades. I've been working my whole life, and I just got involved in the libertarian circles over the last couple years. The way I kind of got into the libertarian circle is through the workplace, because I just realized all the regulations that they were passing were not making people safer. They weren't making the job easier to do. They weren't protecting the environment. It was all about compliance, and if they could grab you for anything that you're not complying with, they will. A great example is one time I was on a stepladder hooking chains up to pick up a shipping container. I was standing on top of the shipping container, like a 8-foot wide, 20-foot long container, attaching some chains, and a guy came out screaming at me because I wasn't wearing a harness, and this shipping container is only 8 feet tall, and you had a 5-foot long lanyard that attaches to the top of your back, so if you fell off the shipping container, you'd still hit the ground even if you're wearing a harness. So it was obviously not about safety, and I had to get out a stepladder, which is much less safe than, you know, standing on the second to top step hooking up these chains. So I just realized really quickly that this was all bullshit, and if that was all bullshit, probably everything else was. And working in the workforce, I found out really quickly that the worst jokes you ever hear from a comedian are absolutely nothing compared to the worst joke you'll hear in a break room or on a job site. And if anyone in the audience works a blue-collar job, you probably would agree with that. And I think what that is so many people who just work in an office, who have never worked 20 hours straight putting power lines back up or driven through a snowstorm in Colorado in an 18-wheeler or had to dig a hole or do anything hard in their lives, they don't know what it's like to grapple with getting through the day with an obscene sense of humor. That's just a thing that a lot of people who have been in the military, a lot of people who have been through rough stretches of their lives, it's what a lot of people do. They just deal with things with a rough sense of humor. And the people who haven't been through those things, they just don't know how to connect to that. And any of the guys here who know me, I have a proclivity for a dark sense of humor that I use online quite a bit. But this actually precedes the libertarian movement. Long before I became a podcaster, before I contributed to social media, before I was on Fox News and made international headlines or whatever, I actually created this user on Facebook where I was mocking line workers who think that they're the coolest shit on planet Earth. Do we have any line construction workers here? Anyone who knows anything about power lines? Probably not. It's pretty, yeah. So with power lines, there's a tier. If you're a first class lineman, you're the guy who's up in the bucket all the time, and you're the cool guy at the top of the food chain, and then it goes down from there. And if you're running a pole setting truck, it's called a digger truck. You have an auger on it. You go around, you dig the holes, you set the poles. So I just made this user account called Digger Brown, where I would just post pictures of the dumbest, easiest pole sets that ever could have been done. And I would just talk about what a cool, awesome shit I was. Like, I was the best motherfucking lineman out there, and nobody out there had any shit on me. And it got hundreds and hundreds of replies from people just furious out of their mind. Like, I've done better than that. That's nothing. You have no idea. And so I tapped into that outrage, and it got people to engage with what I was saying, where if they stepped back at all, they'd totally realize it was satire and that I was just making this up and it was the easiest task on planet Earth. But I realized early on, like, wow, I really have a talent for provoking people. So I didn't really think this had a place in libertarianism, though. Like, when I first started podcasting, if you go back and watch my podcast, or if you go back to, like, early 2021, on my Twitter, like, it was a lot of, I was a lot like Justin Amash. You know, I'd post these Twitter threads about why the minimum wage was a bad idea or why lockdowns weren't doing anything good, and nobody cared. Nobody cared at all. Like, you might get, like, a couple likes here and there, a couple retweets. You might get a couple DMs like, hey, that was a really thoughtful thread you put out there. But just absolutely nothing would come out of it for the most part. And I still thought that that was the right way to do things until I noticed the Libertarian Party of New Hampshire. I was living out in Utah at this time. I'd moved out there to drive truck. But the Libertarian Party of New Hampshire back here, they were causing some chaos. Anyone here remember when they put out the tweet that John McCain's brain tumor saved more lives than Anthony Fauci? And that, you know, that really caused a shitstorm, and it got a lot of people talking about whether or not Anthony Fauci's ideas had really been good and what a piece of shit John McCain was. And I looked at that, and I was like, you know, these guys kind of have a point. And then, if any of you guys remember, that's what actually kick-started the coup that took off here in New Hampshire that ultimately failed and threw everything over to the Mises Caucus, and was actually one of the things that made it easy for the takeover of the Libertarian Party overall to happen. Joe Bishop Henchman resigned. And it was all provoking these retards to out themselves and act in a reactionary way over John McCain, or the idea that, child labor isn't a libertarian belief, that you should be allowed to work before you're 18 or 16 years old. So that was just, it was eye-opening to me, and I realized I might have been wrong in my approach. They got all sorts of press. It was the first time in a while I'd seen libertarians make it into the news, and it was surrounding that they thought John McCain was bad, and that they thought Anthony Fauci was a piece of shit, and that they thought child labor laws shouldn't exist. And then, a year later, the New Hampshire legislature actually removed a lot of the child labor laws that we have here in New Hampshire. And it got me thinking about Donald Trump. When Donald Trump ran for president, that guy got so much free media. Anyone here a Rand Paul supporter back in 2016? So were you pissed at how little media he got? And were you amazed at how much Trump just constantly got day after day after day? And why did he get that? He got that because he was being kind of dumb and obnoxious, and he'd get wall-to-wall media coverage. And so I don't think that we should just be dumb. I don't think we should be dumb. I think there's a fine line between being obnoxious and getting a point across and being dumb. And Donald Trump is not a smart guy, so he was just dumb. But he got all this free media that he never could have gotten otherwise. And, you know, it was just wall to wall every day. And that's something that I realized I think we should be emulating. So I actually made a tweet from my personal account. And I don't know if any of you guys remember this, but it was "Name a Bigger Upgrade." And it was John McCain next to Meghan McCain, and then it was the picture of Meghan McCain crying over her father's casket. And it blew up. Lots of people were very angry at me. I made Siraj Hajmi's list. And then I went on Justin O'Donnell's show, and we were talking about it afterward. And a lot of people had been asking, why do you care about John McCain? John McCain's dead. Pick on somebody else. And I made the point that John McCain's legacy is something that's lionized year after year. And this was in 2021, so 3 years after he had died. And both sides of the establishment came out to lionize him as a maverick, somebody who worked with both sides of the aisle. And I was saying, you know what, this is bullshit. If John McCain starts becoming this icon that we look to in history as a hero, it's going to be like Ronald Reagan or like Abraham Lincoln or FDR. And everyone in this room knows that all those people that I just mentioned are pieces of shit. But we're supposed to look at them with admiration. And when we look at those people with admiration, when people nowadays start doing the same types of things that those people did, we look at that as heroic. That's why secession is such a hot topic to talk about. There's nothing racist or indicative of slavery surrounding secession, but because Lincoln has been lionized as this god in our history, we look at secession as evil. We always connect it to slavery, and that's just because of an inaccurate portrayal of who someone was, and that's obviously happened with John McCain. So then I ended up moving here to New Hampshire and joining the LPNH comms team, and so on August 25th of 2022, I made that tweet, the one that's on my shirt. It just, everyone was lionizing John McCain again, what a great war hero he was, how much we should worship him, blah, blah, blah. So I just tweeted out the picture from the Libertarian Party in New Hampshire with Meghan McCain crying over the casket, and it just said, "Happy Holidays." And I was up in Maine when I made this tweet with really bad cell phone service, and so I made the tweet, and I put my phone away, And I took it out about 10 hours later, and I was like, holy shit. If you just typed Meghan McCain in on Google, it was the first result that came up. And I went back to Twitter, and I saw that Meghan McCain had unblocked us from the previous year when we'd made the other McCain tweet, and that she had quote tweeted it 6 times, condemning us. And so I was really, I didn't know what to do. I called a few people in the party, and I was like, I don't know how to process this. You know, I thought this was just going to kind of be like any other tweet and go along its way. But it got us international news. Then suddenly over the next few days, news publications were contacting us, asking us why we had made this tweet. And then we put out series and series of tweets about how John McCain had helped arm terrorist groups in Syria, how he helped arm the Azov Battalion with Lindsey Graham in Ukraine, and how he's responsible very much for leading up to the crisis that we're dealing with there today. And a lot of other things that people don't know, that he accidentally bombed a U.S. aircraft carrier during the Vietnam War, that his father helped cover up the USS Liberty incident. There's all sorts of things about John McCain that are awful. And we got the New York Post to write articles about John McCain's war crimes. And I realized, like, man, this is the first time the New York Post has probably ever written about that. I don't think that they'd ever choose to write about something like that. So then we made a few more tweets. We made ones about Zelensky. We made ones about aid to Israel. We made all sorts of them. And we were actually there for a few months. Like, every tweet we would make international headlines. And we could kind of direct the conversation. So during this time, we also made some mistakes. I made some of them, some other people on the team made some of them, and they caused people a lot of strife and some financial damage, and I totally realized that, and I don't think that those tweets were good, and I think that, we've tried to adjust and move on. So I do think that this is a very finely calibrated tool that we have, but I do think when used correctly, we can get more media attention than we would otherwise. For example, CNN was talking about us because of the tweets we made, and the last time that they had talked about libertarians was when Justin Amash said he was going to run for president. So I think that the Libertarian Party is in a kind of unique position where there is one side of the aisle that really wants our support. And that's the Republicans. Maybe in some rare circumstances, the Democrats are trying to court us, but it's really, really almost never that way. Here in New Hampshire, when Don Baldock was running for Senate, we were getting tons of messages from people all the time saying, you guys need to drop out and support this guy. Yeah, Maggie Hassan is the worst. Don Baldock's no angel, but we absolutely can't get Maggie Hassan. We need to get him in instead. And they were just scared that we were going to possibly make them lose the election. And Scott was talking yesterday during his speech about how this is the true power we have. I look to people like AOC and Ilhan Omar with a little bit of admiration because they have ideas that are not mainstream amongst everybody on the left. Most people on the left don't believe we could have a Green New Deal. Most people on the left don't want reparations. Most people on the left don't want a lot of these things that have been forced into the zeitgeist by a very small minority. They've basically held the entire left wing of this country hostage. And if you don't support these few things that we want, then you are canceled. I would love to see libertarians be able to do that to the right wing of this country. If you want to go to war, if you want to raise taxes, if you want to pass gun control, you will be canceled. You will not win an election. And I think that we've been going about it the wrong way. We think that, you know, if we just present ourselves in a respectable enough way, if we're professional enough, if we articulate the ideas correctly, then everyone's going to jump on board and they're going to have this moment of sanity and everything's going to come together and then they'll see that we're right. But I don't think that's really ever happened in history. Every historical movement has been led by radicals who are pushing incredibly unpopular ideas at the time. I mean, Jeremy Kaufman was making a point during a speech he did about a month ago, earlier in June, about Pride Month and how amazing it is. Imagine telling someone in San Francisco back in the 1970s what level of control Pride was going to have over the zeitgeist by 2020. They would have laughed in your face. They'd have been like, that's ridiculous. But the people who pushed that movement never back down, they're very determined to get what they want, and they're never worried about appearing crazy. They just keep pushing the envelope and smashing the Overton window. So I want to do the same thing to the right wing, and I think that this type of messaging is how we initially break through and get attention and start rocking the boat a little bit. I mean, I really think if we had made a tweet thread about what a shit stain John McCain was, there's no way in hell it ever would have gotten international news. There's just no way. But if we can hook them with a shocking image or something funny, something provocative, and then show them all the content underneath, I find that that's extremely effective and a valuable way to message. And I think we should be making warmongering unpalatable. If that's a position that you have, I think that you shouldn't be allowed to hold public office, and people should be embarrassed to be associated with it. So, I do want to offer it up for questions, because I know this is kind of contentious. A lot of people have pushback on this, so if anyone wants to push back or ask for clarification, I'd be willing to do that at this point. Yeah, Lions of Liberty is a great podcast. Everyone go check it out. You owe me a steak, by the way, Brian. Yeah.
Yeah, Reed, when's the next time you're going to be on Tower Gang, since you are one of the six hosts?
I condemn Tower Gang as irrational and repugnant. No, hopefully I'll be back on soon. I have been, this is actually a good place to break this. I've talked about it on some of my past podcasts, but when I was a truck driver, I was alone all the time, and I had plenty of time to listen to podcasts and take in information, and then at the end of the day, I was actually seeking some sort of human interaction because I'd been alone the whole time. Now, with what I'm doing with power line construction, I'm working with people all day long. I'm exhausted. It's outside. I can't listen to anything while I'm working because it's manual labor. You need to be able to hear everything that's going on around you. So when I get out of work, I kind of want to just crash on the couch and be by myself. So that's why there haven't been as many podcasts, but hopefully I'll be doing some more soon and making it on Tower Gang again. I don't think so.
There you go. Here we go. Appreciate your talk. So some of your critics talk about how Twitter's not real life, and this isn't helpful to the movements, et cetera. So my question to you is, like, those outside of social media, those of us in, like, the real world going about our regular day, how can we apply, like, your reasoning here to convincing folks to move into this space as far as, like, liberty and convincing them of our arguments?
Yeah, so I think that's a good point. What I would say is a lot of people criticize the Libertarian Party of New Hampshire or Jeremy Kaufman's campaign messaging as not bringing people in. But, and I think that's a fair criticism. Like, if you look at the election results or the number of people that joined the party or whatever, but that's pretty much across the board. We're not having success in general. I think it's weird to look at the messaging, which has been extremely successful. The Twitter account's at like 50,000 followers. Jeremy Kaufman's ads got millions of views across all sorts of different platforms. The War is Gay ad is one of the memes that we drop when Raytheon is trying to, you know, get people to join their gay pride float or whatever. So I think that that is a problem, that we haven't been able to translate this into new members or into bringing more people into the movement. But I think a lot of people try to blame the messaging for that, and I don't think that's the case. I think if you're looking at just the messaging, that it's been the most successful by far, if that makes sense. I don't think your mic's on.
What do I gotta do?
Flip the switch.
Oh, sorry.
There
about
we
that.
Go.
All right, so just to go back, I run a social media account. I live in a very liberal area. And just a quick story, basically, there was a statue of a witch, Samantha from Bewitched, was vandalized. Somebody threw red paint on it. And arguably, it looked better. But everybody was up in arms about, you know, vandalizing this fictional character statue. So what I did was I took another statue in town and I photoshopped pink paint all over it, which really, like, pissed a lot of people off. And basically, if you look on Google Trends at our performance, we 100X'd in this month that we made this controversial post. And it was basically like, when you're looking at the comments, we got a ton of engagement, but a lot of people were really upset by us. So it's like,
yeah.
I don't know how you balance, you know, this. You're kind of playing the same game that the media is playing at this point, where it's like, yeah, you're Donald Trumping it. You're getting a lot of attention. But I don't know how you balance that back into, like, your messaging and where, how far do you push it? And like, is engagement really all you're going for? Or is there some balancing point where you're trying to leverage those people back into functioning members of the community?
Yeah, I mean, I'd kind of give the same answer that I think you are pointing out a problem, but I don't think it's necessarily the messaging that's the problem. What we need to figure out is how to translate that messaging into success in other places. What I will say is, some of the pushback that we got for the, specifically the McCain tweet, was because Timcast really did not like that tweet, and we were worried about alienating them. However, the new secretary for Timcast actually loved that tweet, and that's actually how I ended up getting on the show, because Cassandra McDonald loves the LP New Hampshire. It's her favorite libertarian account, and she's always retweeting us, telling us that if LP New Hampshire was what the whole LP was, then she'd become a member right away. So I think, you know, sometimes we see people turned off by it, and that's scary, but it also opens up a whole different group of people. And I think the people who are opened up by it are much more likely to listen to us and care what we have to say than the people who are worried about, you know, disrespecting a warmonger who died. That tweet is still up. If you guys go to LP New Hampshire and type in Happy Holidays, just go look through the quote tweets of all the Republicans caterwauling about how awful this is, and then go to their page and look where they're talking about how we need mean tweets back. So they like mean tweets, as long as they're not about their warmongers. I thought it was like, it was a beautiful dividing moment when you saw people from the right and left coming out and condemning us, and then people from the right and left coming out and saying, holy shit, this is awesome, I'm glad someone finally said this. And I think that those types of people are the ones who are going to be more likely on our side anyway, if that makes sense. All right, thanks guys. This is probably pretty short, I don't even know. Oh, whatever. By the way, we are trying to up our membership, so if you would please go check out the Libertarian Party tent and the Libertarian Party of New Hampshire tent. And one of the fundraising gimmicks we got for the Libertarian Party of New Hampshire is, if you can come up with a based libertarian tweet that we okay, and you pay $30 to become a member, we will publish that tweet for you. So go up to the Libertarian Party of New Hampshire tent. Looks like I got another question here, though.
I asked Spike Cohen this back at Float Fest, and he had a pretty good, convincing answer. I mean, I'm still never going to be a voter, but whatever. Why should I vote for the Libertarian Party when the values that I espouse and advocate for are a reduction in violence, not so much a better policy? What's the term for voters? They're like
single issue.
Single issue voters, yeah. I don't even fucking vote enough to know that. But if I'm a single issue voter, and the only issue that I care about is the initiation of violence as a means of social control, why should I vote for the Libertarian Party? Because, you know, Dave Smith is a statist.
So I don't believe in voting for the Libertarian Party for the sake of the Libertarian Party. I believe in doing it to tell the Republicans, basically fuck around and find out. So, the Republicans pretend to care about my values. They pretend to care about lower spending. They pretend to care about smaller government. The Democrats don't pretend. So I don't really care what the Democrats do. If I tell the Democrats, I'm not voting for you this year, they're going to be like, yeah, no shit, of course you aren't. Where the Republicans, they're actively trying to get my vote. So if you vote Libertarian as a middle finger basically to the Republicans saying, if you want my support, you need to do better next time, I think that that ultimately brings your reduction in violence that you want. Here in New Hampshire, I've got my camper parked in someone's yard that I'm living with right now, and I was talking with him, and he asked me, why here in New Hampshire do I have a Republican sheriff? Basically everything in my town is Republican. My state representatives are Republican. But Don Baldock, you know, couldn't win. Like, why don't we have Republicans in federal office? And I said, I don't know if this is true, but this is what I'm going to say because I like the way it sounds and I want this to be true. But if Don Baldock was running for sheriff, then I'd probably vote for him because he's the type of guy who would be like, yeah, you know, I don't think that we should sign off on this red flag warrant. And, yeah, if you're shooting fireworks off at your house or having a bonfire, I don't think I'm going to come harass you over it. And, yeah, I'm probably not going to enforce lockdowns. He seems like that type of guy. But as a senator, he wants to go to war with Iran. He wants to go to war with China and Russia and North Korea. So fuck him. He's not going to win anything. So if we can start sending that message to the Republicans, like, look, we will vote for you. We're not scared of ours next to your name, but we want Bruce Fenton next time, then I think you'll get your reduction in violence.
Follow-up question.
Sure.
Is it worth it to vote Libertarian in Chicagoland, or should I just say, fuck waiting to raise my kid and just move here?
Yeah, it is not worth it. Move to New Hampshire. That's the only way for liberty in our lifetime. All right, guys, also, this meme has kind of evolved. So if you want to buy a shirt or a mug or a pin, go to the Free State Base Tent, and Rosa Mora is selling all this merch if you want to check it out. And thanks for listening. I appreciate it. If you want to talk to me afterward, I'll be around. So.